He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
And I am up in the Green Mountains of Vermont, where I'm recording this morning, and looking out over the very green mountains of Vermont. I tell you, the foliage is incredibly thick, as I guess it is all over New England, which is blessed with probably the best perfect weather anywhere in our nice country. And the point of this discussion, or this particular part, is I'm looking out over Route 30 or Route 11 or a combination of the two. I'm doing a sort of an informal polling of what vehicles I'm watching traveling the road. And I would say 90 to 95% of what I've been looking at for the past 20 minutes is consisting of SUVs, which has been a big part of our discussion on this show for weeks now, because SUVs have sort of taken over the market of vehicles, primarily sold by the manufacturers in our country. And I believe, Jay, that it's happening in Europe as well. You can chime in shortly. But up here where I am at, there are a number of people. I'm at the Bromley Ski Resort, where I am a visitor in a condominium. And the population up here is mixed, but with people who have taken their condominiums as places of refuge from what's been going on elsewhere in the Northeast. And all the people up here are recreationally oriented because they ski in the wintertime, and in the summertime they seem to be equipped with paddleboards, kayaks, bicycles, all of which require SUV-type vehicles, if not pickup trucks, whether they're included, as vehicles of transportation for all these outdoor recreational assorted vehicles. And, of course, there are little off-road all-terrain vehicles as well, so you have pickup trucks with trailers, which just tells you what recreational places attract in terms of people and vehicles.
Well, so you are saying two things, and I have two things to say. The first thing you're saying is nobody rented out their... The people who are there are regulars there. They didn't rent out their...
Most of them are owners, although I understand that in the row that I'm in, one of the units is currently occupied by a renter.
Okay, so because the question... We know about New Yorkers and their SUV. I mean, my favorite
correct.
Always was your Hummer that you needed to bring from Manhattan to the terrifying terrain of Golden's Bridge, but let that pass. The second question, Robin, though, is, and if you recall, and I think Jay had this experience last year when you went to Jay, I believe you went to an event at Watkins Glen or something, and you said, "Don't worry, the pickup is never going out of fashion." I might have the wrong place, but whatever it is, you know. What is lost sight of in the, let's call it either national reporting or in the automotive magazines is the, and this happens everywhere, is the, gosh, I hate this word, but I'm going to use it anyway, the granular nature of life. In other words, if you have a ski resort in X,
anywhere,
then you're going to need X. If you have a, you know, if you are in the,
I think
farming business.
You're going to need exactly.
You have to have a vehicle at Y.
Right, and it's just the sooner that I think goes into the heads, the just the mental understanding of this industry, the better. That's all.
Well, that's true, and you know, I want to bring up the pickup situation because there are a lot of pickups. It is 120 miles to where I am from where I live down there next to our broadcast booth area. So it is a two and a half hour drive, roughly, depending on the traffic and the road you take. And we go into, as we're moving in towards the realm and the world of electric pickups, here comes the constant discussion about range. And pickup trucks have got great big, the big standard size ones, of course, have got big bodies or big frames underneath the pickup beds. And I don't know where the batteries are going to be going for the electric ones, but they're going to be going probably in the engine bays, because there won't be any gasoline or diesel engines in these pickup trucks. So they may be able to, hold a large pack of batteries, which they're going to need to do because, you know, they talk about mileage ratings of these pickup trucks, and they're saying that some of them are going to have 300 mile range, plus mile range, and some of them are going to have 275, and I think one, the Hummer, was going to have the new electric Hummer. Jay, can you tell me what the range was supposed to be? It might have been in the 400-mile range.
You know,
but all these ranges, as are the gasoline ranges that are given, are basically for the vehicles unladen. And unladen means at their lightest weight, maybe with a driver and a passenger, not laden down with several hundred pounds of gear, trailer towing one or two ATVs or more, racks on the roofs holding a couple of kayaks, which admittedly are fairly light, but, and the number of people plus the luggage. And you can be guaranteed that the mileages that are quoted in the advertising for these upcoming vehicles are going to not reflect the situation that this is for unladen vehicles only. The mileage will vary with the amount of weight that they're carrying. And when you're up in the Green Mountains of Vermont, you're not on very flat terrain either. And hills come and go, and of course, some of them will have rechargeable capabilities going down the slope, going down the grades. And then the minute they start up the grades, there's going to be a heavy burden of electric draw on the battery packs. And are electric pickups going to take over? I want Jay to chime in on this because he's a big pro electric vehicle person.
Well, before he chimes in,
Jay, here we go.
Before Jay chimes in, I just want to announce that my brother very proudly let me know that his Model Y came in.
Oh, it did.
And he is totally thrilled.
He's in love with it?
Yeah. He has had, now I'm going to get my model, you know, from way back when.
Well, the Model Y is the new SUV, isn't it?
I know.
Let me go on the limb here.
Okay.
Model Y is going to become the best-selling vehicle in America, except for the pickup truck.
I think that.
Because, for good reason.
Right, but if you can afford it.
Well, there's that, but you look at the median price of cars is now up to $37,000, and we know that. And
heading for 40.
I'm sure.
What does a Y cost? I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I can't hear you very well, Jay. Sorry. Is a Y a $70,000 Tesla, or is it? What is it?
No, it's more expensive than a 3, but I think it starts at around 50-ish. So
it was 52.8 when I looked it up. But
so
that
I think
started.
For $60,000, you come out with a Model Y, okay? And that compares to mid-size luxury SUVs, whether it is a BMW X3, Audi Q5. Take a well-equipped Ford Explorer, you're going to be in that price range. Take a Jeep Grand Cherokee, you're going to be in that price range. So, you know, it's hitting all the marks. The range is going to be decent, not quite as high as a Model 3, but, you know, Tesla's range is increasing every on a regular basis. The Model S now has a 400-mile range. There's no more range anxiety. Nobody drives on a regular basis more than 400 miles in a day. Basically, you'd be having to spend more than 6 hours in your car. It's just not happening in most cases. And now to go back to pickup trucks, and we started with SUVs, and then the conversation kind of meandered to trucks. But, you know, pickup trucks are, electric trucks are still a ways away. They're a year or two away. And honestly, I think that's going to be the segment of the market that's going to be the slowest to electrify. And that's only because of the market. And I think that electric trucks make a lot of sense, but I don't think they're going to be arriving that quickly. Let's see how Ford does with the new F-150 that is a hybrid, and let's see how that goes. That's a first step.
Rivian's coming on, too, and that's not going to be a hybrid. That's going to be all electric. And so there's another one as well. There are a number of names that I haven't learn to remember as we discuss about the electric pickup situation. But I'm thinking maybe they should have laden and unladen mileage labels on the stickers.
Well,
because I think there's
going to
be
vehicle.
A considerable difference. You know, they say they can tow 10,000 pounds, 16,000 pounds, blah, blah, blah. You can tell you the electric vehicles will be able to tow them, but I want to know what the ranges are going to be.
Well,
and to that point, you've got electric tractor trailers starting to show up on the highways. And they are going to have various ranges, too, but they're going to have huge battery packs to haul those things, to make those things go along a decent mileage level to get from a factory to a warehouse to a delivery point. At any rate, we can go all day about range of those vehicles, but I will say I've been driving a Toyota Highlander hybrid, which is an old version. It's a 14, and it's been averaging between 23 and 24 miles per gallon since fill up. You can set these range things to reflect various types of conditions that you're traveling in your hybrids from on a Highlander. And I've got it set for refuel, so it resets every time you open the filler neck and refuel the vehicle. And it's consistent between 23 and maybe if it's driven with somebody who knows how to drive it, you can get up to 24 to 25 miles per gallon on a tank full. But the new ones are supposed to be going to be giving in the 30s average. Hybrids are fine because they're gasoline and batteries, so you don't have a range anxiety. Jay is saying we don't have range anxieties. There are Teslas here. Right now, the only electric vehicle I have seen in this particular area where I'm in are Teslas. I haven't seen an Audi e-tron, and I haven't seen anything else that's electric only.
Well,
and most of the Audi.
Continue,
I haven't seen any Porsche Taycans. Those are the three that I can relate in this show. And I don't think there's another electric out there. There is probably a Mini Cooper electric, but you're not going to see any up here. So Teslas are certainly range anxiety less. I don't think there's a problem with Teslas because they are a proven vehicle. And so far, I haven't had anybody really concerned about the range for traveling at least 200 plus miles to a destination as long as there's a charging station at the other end of the trip. Jay, I think you had some topics you wanted to bring up. Let's go.
Well, you started out by talking about SUVs, and I will say over and over and over again that there's a great alternative to driving an SUV, and that is driving a wagon. And several people have asked me about wagons in recent times, and I had the opportunity to test drive a wagon that I think is absolutely great. And Robin, I tried to get you to sit in one a couple of years ago, and you would not give it the time of day. And having driven it, I think it's a fantastic car. Now, there's history behind, you know, where is it going? It's actually no longer sold here. And it is the Buick Regal Tour X. It is a fabulous-looking car. It looks a little bit like the new Audi Allroad. It drives amazingly well. It's very quiet. It goes over bumps and bad pavement extremely well. It's got the 8-speed transmission that's found in all of the European cars and a lot of American cars. That's very smooth and shifting. 2 liters, 250 horse. You got a lot of space, and substantially less expensive than most SUVs, even affordable SUVs, even, you know, Honda CRVs, Subaru Foresters. That's my take on that car.
Jay, define the true wagon definition versus the SUV, because I think it's a blur. I consider the Volvos to be wagons. They are mostly considered to be SUV types.
What the crossovers? Because the XC is not, but the regular wagon
is.
Well, is a wagon in your thing a two-wheel drive, or you've got an all-wheel drive?
And it can be an all-wheel drive. The Touareg.
How do you define the Buick?
And by the way, I want to give a little history about the Buick Regal Touareg. It is an Opel Insignia by design, and manufactured, and was manufactured, and still is manufactured for other markets by Opel in Germany. And as we know, GM sold Opel to Peugeot, and so that was the end of that collaboration. But it was interesting, and the Buick Touareg is one of many, many American manufacturers' European imports. Ford did that, over the last few decades, imported cars directly from Europe, and either sold them as Fords here or rebranded them. You know, we think of them.
Well, you had the marker.
Back in the 80s. Nobody could even pronounce the name, and you wonder why they're no longer there. But they were great cars. GM did the same thing, and the last, car they brought in was the Touareg, which, nobody even knows about. And you can find them, and there are great deals out there.
And so, Robin, what's your definition of wagon? Because I remember, and this goes back decades, but a mutual friend got one of the original, I think it was Audi something. And
Audi never called their
wagon. We always tortured him for calling it a something like a lower SUV or a something SUV. And in fact, it was, to all outward appearances, a wagon, which is why we tortured him.
Well, the wagons that I remember were the LTD, Ford Country Squire, the Chevrolet,
Oldsmobile Vista Chevrolet Cruiser.
What about my beloved wagon?
It tells everybody how old we are. But yeah, those were the great American wagons of, the 60s and the 70s. And then they petered away, and then Chrysler brought in the minivan and changed that was the first change in the first sign of death for the wagon was the minivan. And then minivans became uncool and SUVs took over. But I think there's going to be, and I've said this before, there's a blur between all these car styles.
I do too.
And if you go back, way more back historically, cars were higher up. In the 30s and the 40s, they were body-on-frame, big truck-looking things. And it is only in the 50s that automotive design really brought the cars down, the sight line of cars down. It changes. And the models Y versus the Model 3 in the Tesla lineup is a perfect example of what is going to sell and why it's going to sell. They're basically the same cars. The Model Y is just a little more practical. It's a little higher, a little more space inside. And of course, it is the more practical version of the car. So it is going
to
sell.
And one of the things is, I think, sorry to interject, but just if the great migration maintains, if more people do decide to relocate to smaller, either rural or smaller places with their kids and their families, I am most interested to see what the vehicle of how life changes in a vehicular manner, because one of the great things about estate cars, also known as station wagons, is that you can put a bunch of individuals and luggage and pets and skis and stuff in there without the truckiness.
Well, my theory of a wagon was, if a wagon is basically a vehicle whose trunk, which is what you called a storage area in a sedan, was basically a square-backed body style over the trunk area behind the rear seats of a two-row passenger sedan. Now we've got three-row SUVs, and the third row folds into the floor so that if you don't have seven kids or seven people to haul, you can get a fair amount of luggage between the second row of seats and the rear hatch, which is an SUV term, versus a square, spread off like the classic Volvo wagons of last century, which are still very popular and in big demand by a certain population of our drivers because they are so practical. They have square corners. You can put square boxes from the back of the rear seat to the tailgate, which is a tailgate that actually goes up. It's perpendicular to the ground in most real wagons and not a hatchback. And
Avant the name that Audi had for their wagons.
The Avant.
The Avant.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And it was a wagon, but it also is a crossover, too, because they've just got sloped backs. And, I mean, you look at all these squashed, smaller SUVs, the Range Rover, for example, and some of these other ones, they look like an elephant. As you say, Jill, an elephant sat on the back part and pushed it down.
Oh, that's most specifically the Land Rover Evoque, just in case they want to hire me as a spokesperson.
Yeah. Right. And the visibility goes down commensurately with that, the amount of slope between the high part of the roof and the back part of the tailgate. But for every inch it goes down, you lose practical storage space. And I tell you, if you've got two or three kids and two adults and luggage, you need a larger SUV. The smaller ones just aren't going to cut it. Lots of Audi Q5s around, lots of BMW, BMW X5s around. And then you go down to the X3s and the X1s, which aren't necessarily a lot smaller, but they are smaller. And you really can't fit a lot of stuff behind the rear seats in the small SUVs because that's where the length issue comes in, and the length has diminished considerably in the small SUVs. They're better for probably a couple of adults and maybe one or two kids.
But, maybe we just need to get rid of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very. I think there's also that possibility. All right, in the final 2 minutes, who's
Jay's
doing what?
Making offer.
Okay. All right, Jay, go.
Well, it was the 4th of July weekend, and I hope everybody had a great 4th of July. And I know we've been talking about cars and American cars, and I just came across the list of, U.S.-made cars, and we're always surprised to find that there is no such thing as a truly American car, made with American parts in America. The Ford Ranger, I think, is the most American made car by content, percentage of content, followed by the Jeep Cherokee, and then the Teslas, and then you have a bunch of Hondas. And I think even like the Mercedes C-Class with one of its engine, which is built in Alabama, has a high content of American parts. So that's just a little take on that. And I'm always looking for a safety tip, right? And I think that it's always about where you're looking. And there is summer traffic back on the roads. So just keep your eyes peeled.
And it's mixing a lot with bicyclists, too, on even the major roads. Bicycling has become in vogue again during some of this stuff going on. And they're on the major highways as well as the side roads. So as Jay says, focused concentration on your driving is paramount to the safety of both you and these bicyclists, because you go on roads with a lot of shade, and if they don't have bright wear on, you cannot see them if you're not totally focused on what's in front of you as opposed to what's in the cockpit around you.
And I just want to add, there's a new development around that, and that is e-bikes, because a lot of e-bikers don't have the same, they're not as familiar as non-e-bikers, let's call them. So they're on a sort of, they're more observing. They're enjoying their bikes and they're observing their landscape, and they're not necessarily focused on bike etiquette.
We can revisit e-bikes. I think they're cool, but there's a lot to be said about them.
All right. He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.